So last time we saw a couple of pieces from Reb Tzadok about free will, Bechira, what is the role of free will, especially with respect to tshuva. What we didn't have a chance to see, we didn't get to finish it. I urge you, if you're interested in this topic, to keep on reading. The next piece from the Pri Tzadik has a fascinating mashal from the Ishbitzer about what it's like to sin, relating to free will and the like. But I'd like to start today with something which relates to that discussion that we had with Tzadok and pertains to free will, and is something which I think bothers many, many people. And that is the following question. Is it ever possible that there be a nisayon that one cannot pass? We saw before the Rambam and other thinkers all uphold the notion of free will, that Bechira is something that's the basis and the fundamental premise of all religion, and as such, one would have assumed that, of course, one has free will about everything. Now, of course, we said before there are certain cases in which one doesn't, but generally speaking, especially about a nisayon, something, some type of test, that there's always free will, or the way it's frequently stated is that there's no such thing as an nisayon that you can't pass. However, there are a number of sources which seem to acknowledge that the possibility exists that there is such a thing as an nisayon a person can't pass. And we're going to see two sources about that now. Maybe we'll just see one. The first one is a letter from Rav Huttner. This is an idea, if anyone doesn't have them, they're up here. This is a, Rav Huttner was asked the following question. This is from his Igros, and he was asked the following question. Let's see. Skip a couple lines. Igeres number 10. The questioner said that there's a pasuk in Malachim. This was something that Shlomo HaMelech stated when he was building the Beis HaMikdash, his tefillah. Ki yachata lecha, ki ein adam asher lo yachata, v'anafta bam, v'nasatam lefnei oyev. When people sin to you, because after all, there's no one who doesn't sin. Ein adam ba'aretz asher yase tov lo yachata, and you will be angry at them, and you will punish them. And the question that was asked of Huttner was, if somebody sins because they have no choice but to sin, then it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense that they should be punished for that sin. As we saw at the very beginning, one of the reasons that we know there's free will based on the Torah is because the Torah says that you'll be rewarded for doing that which is right, you'll be punished for doing that which is wrong, and it's unfair to punish or reward someone if they didn't have free will. And yet the pasuk here seems to indicate that a person will be punished even if they had no choice but to sin. And Rav Huttner, in his answer, basically acknowledges that there is such a category as a nisayon that a person can't pass. He acknowledges this in other places as well. There are other thinkers. There's a famous letter from the Stipler, who writes a similar thing, that sometimes there are nisyonos that you can't pass, and the nisayon isn't the guf ha-nisayon, but rather it's how you relate to it, how you respond to it. It's a famous interpretation of Rav Huttner's famous interpretation of Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'Kam is related. And much of these ideas, as we saw from our discussion of Rav Tzadok last time, emerged from the thinking of Rav Tzadok and earlier thinkers. Yes?
Isn't that a Gemara
tradition? Yeah. And there's also a Rashi that seems to say... There are Makaros and... Well, which Gemara are you referring to?
I think Lama Kassam Beis says that
Okay, so that's a good question. That's not a raya, because, well, it's a machlokas rishonim, whether that's a raya. But the simple, I actually thought you were referring to something else, a Gemara, a Rashi and Ksubos. There's a The simple reading of that Gemara, according to most Rishonim, does not mean to say that you know for sure you're going to sin, but a person who feels overcome, so he should do it. It's a Kiddushin, Gemara and Daf, a Mem Amad Aleph in Kiddushin. Amar Rabbi Lai, Imroe Adam Shiitro Mizgaber Alav Yelech Lamakom Shein Makirin Oso Val Yechal Shem Shemayim Befar Hesia. Now if you look over there, Tosfos says, no, Chas V'Shalom Hotel Olav Or Aveira, El al yidei yegias haderech v'achsenos u'levisha shechorim mishabrim yetzer umonim adam and havera. So the way Tosos understands that Gemara is that the hope is that throughout the tircha of going to this other town and the process of wearing black and the like will prevent a person from sinning. If you look at the Rif in Moed Katan on Daf Tesamid Aleph and the Rush also in Moed Katan Simon Yud Aleph, they say, we don't hold of this principle of Rabbi Eli because Hakol Bidei Shamayim Chutz Meir Shamayim. So the indication is that the Rif understood the Gemara like you understood the Gemara, and therefore he rejects the Gemara. But you're right. Perhaps, according to the Rif, it's a machlokes. So that's an interesting question you bring up. But that Gemara in and of itself isn't going to be a definitive proof, because if you understand the Gemara like Tosfos, then it's not saying that the person has no choice but to sin. Rather, the hope is that the process will help him not sin. Be that as it may, Rav Huttner acknowledges this. And therefore, he asks the question, how could a person be punished? How could a person be punished for a sin which they had no choice but to commit? And his answer is that you're right. A person would not be punished for a sin that they had no choice but to sin. But the problem is that a person doesn't necessarily know. If a person does an Avera, even if they felt their desire to do this Avera was very, very powerful, however, they can never know for sure that this was an Nisayon that they were unable to be Mizgaber in. And therefore, a person has to do tshuva anyway. And if you don't do tshuva, then your lack of tshuva is an indication that you didn't take the sin so seriously, or you don't take sinning so seriously, as the Rav Huttner says, "Im hu poter atzmo mitikune tshuva al yidei zeh shehu zokef es chatav al cheshbon haklal shel ein adam tzadik baretz harei afim lekushta demilsa hayu chatay malal lemala mikoacha bechira shelo bedinhu she'anesh alehen me'achar sheheder atshuva mare pchisas madregas." So Rav Huttner continues and elaborates on this point, but you see that he is willing to acknowledge, at least on extreme or unusual circumstances, that there are certain nisyonos, are certain chataim, which perhaps are beyond a person's threshold. This is put differently by different thinkers, whether you call it a nekudas habechira or the like, and this is an important principle. I don't think it's agreed upon by everybody. But under many circumstances, it's an appealing approach. One other point, yes.
I mean, just within like Rav Dessler and Kudus of Bechira, I mean, I don't think Rav Dessler would call it as an assignment he can't pass. That wasn't your assignment.
Perhaps, but practically speaking, it was a chait that you had no choice but to commit. So it doesn't matter whether you call it an assayin or not. The point is, is it true that a person will never sin, sinning as defined as violating the Torah, without freely choosing to do so? And the answer is, sometimes they will. Okay. Turning back to earlier in the source sheet, and we're not going to be able to get through much of what's here. If you're interested in the topics, I certainly would encourage you to look at some of these makoros. But a couple of sources in the Gemara that deal with this issue. Up until this point, we've been focusing mostly on the Rishonim, but it's worthwhile, I think, to go back to the Gemara. And there's a Gemara in Nida. This is the famous Gemara that everyone quotes relating to free will. Darish Rabbi Chanina Bar Papa, Osa Malach HaMemuna Al HaRayon Laila Shemo, Venotel Tipa, Mamidalf Nakarish Baruch, Vomer, Vibonish Olam, Tipa Zumate Aleha, Gibor Ochalash, Chachamo Tipesh, Ashiro Ani, Vilu Rasho Tzadik Loka Amar, Kedrebi Hanina, Dam Rabbi Hanina, Hakobi De Shemaim Chutzmir Shemaim, Shenemar, Veata Yisrael, Ma Shem Shal Meimach, Ki Imlir Asa Shem Lokacha Vigomer. So what the Gemara here says is that Hakobi De Shemaim Chutzmir Shemaim, that God does not predict or decree whether a fetus is going to be a tzaddik or rasha. Their genes, their genetic makeup, whether it may include things such as whether they'll be strong or weak and even rich or poor, but it will not include tzaddik or rasha. The Rambam, in a famous tshuva to Avadya Hager, explains, and that's later on in this packet, the tshuva is in Simen Taf Lamed Vav, explains that the term Yerushamayim here should be understood broadly and not narrowly. He writes, V'chol ma'aseh b'nei adam b'chlal Yerushamayim heim. V'sof kol davar v'davar mimaseh b'nei adam bo lidei mitzvah o avera v'zesha amru razal hakob bidei shamayim b'minhago shel olam v'toldosa v'tivo. But any type of thing that relates to freedom, not Yerushamayim narrowly defined, but Yerushamayim broadly defined, is Bidei Shamayim. Now the Rambam frequently acknowledges, as we mentioned before, that people will have certain predilections. He talks about this in Shmona Prakim, he talks about this in his Akdamach Perish Mishnayos and Hilchos Deos, but nevertheless, ultimately, there is total freedom. Now the Gemara in Sota raises a very interesting question based on this. The Gemara in Sota says, Daf Beis Amud Aleph, Amar Reb Shimon Bar Yitzchak, Ki Ave Pasach Reish Lakish Besota Amar Hachi, Ein Mizavgin Lo La'adam Isha, Ela Lefi Maisav. So a person gets a shidduch based on what they deserve. Eini, skipping a couple lines, V'amar Reb Yehuda Amar Rav, Arboim Yom Kodim Yitziras HaVlad, Bas Kol Yotzeis V'Omeres, Bas Ploni Laploni, Bias Ploni Laploni, Sada Ploni Laploni. So the Gemara's question seems to be one of divine foreknowledge and free will, a question that we dealt with earlier. Essentially, the Gemara says we have a contradiction. On the one hand, a person's shidduch depends on their actions. In other words, it's not something which is predetermined. But at the same time, already before a person is born, it's announced who they're going to marry. And the Gemara assumes in its question that this is a contradiction, because if it's something that depends on my behavior, then it's not something that can possibly be known before my birth. So essentially, the Gemara seems to be asking the contradiction between divine foreknowledge and free will, and the Gemara acknowledges the question. Lo kasha kan bezug rishon, ha bezug rishon, ha bezug sheni. Now, if we look at Rashi, makes the point even stronger. Rashi writes in the source below, Eini, Miave zivog lefi rasha vischos, v'ha mikodim yitzirasam she'en noda risho vischuso. Before the creation of a person, when it's not known his righteousness or his wickedness, mazkirit machrizin es zugo, vim tomar. Rashi is bothered by this question. Hakol galui lefanav. One second. Rashi asks, this isn't a good question. There's divine foreknowledge. God knows what's going to happen in advance. Rashi answers, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyirashamayim. No. God gives a person free will. Yirashamayim is not in the hands of God, or at least he relinquishes that power. As Rashi in Megillah puts it, even more cogently, this is a certain power that God gives up, that he relinquishes. The lashon over there is osa misur bide adam shehu atzmo mechin libo lakach afal gav shayecholas biyado lahachin levavenu elav, but nevertheless he relinquishes that, and therefore there's a contradiction between the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu announces before the birth of a person bas ploni leploni, and the notion of mizdavgin es ha'adam, mizdavgin es ha'adam leviz chuso. And Rashi bases that on hakol bidei shemayim chutz mi'ir shemayim. So Rashi seems to be adopting a position, something that we saw earlier from other Rishonim. We thought that that might be what the Ravid is saying. It's seems to be something along the lines of the Ralbag, and that is that God limits his foreknowledge when it comes to matters of freedom, and therefore he doesn't know, and therefore that's the basis of the Gemara's contradiction. That's, I think, the simple reading of Rashi. Some mefarshei Rashi learn Rashi that way. As I said, if you look at Rav Elazar Meir Horowitz, that's the way he interprets Rashi and the like. I thought, however, that you can learn Rashi, and certainly the Gemara, in such a way that it doesn't imply a lack of foreknowledge. In other words, we could continue to uphold the mainstream position that we saw earlier, namely that there is foreknowledge even with respect to matters of freedom. And that is based on a distinction that we alluded to earlier from the Or Sameach to deflect the question of the Lecha Mishnah from Parak Hei and Parak Vav of Hilchos Tshuva. And that is the following. While it's true that God's knowledge or divine foreknowledge doesn't necessarily contradict free will, however, once that knowledge becomes known to humans or even part of the world, then it indeed would contradict free will. And that's because it's only divine knowledge. Let's for a moment assume the simplest answer. It's only divine knowledge that exists outside of time. So once a statement is made within time, then free will becomes impossible. And since the Gemara says machrizin, it's announced, there's a baskol that says bas ploni leploni, so no, it is no longer, strictly speaking, divine knowledge. It's something which is stated within time. Once it's stated within time, then it would indeed contradict free will. And therefore, were it the case that God announces bas ploni leploni, then it would be impossible to say that mizdavgin es ha'adam lefi zechu Yosef. And that's the basis of the Gemara and Rashi. And I subsequently saw that I believe the Maharshal makes this very point. So the Maharshal says that Rashi doesn't have to hold like the Ralbag. If you look at the Tosas HaRash there in Sota, he might say similar thing, not exactly the same thing. So here's a case, until now we saw this discussion in the Rishonim, a case where we see this very same discussion in the Gemara, in Rashi, and in the Mefarshei Rashi. Yes? Yes, exactly. So that's the way Rashi's understanding it.
Meaning that if you put the statement, God saying so-and-so to so will marry so-and-so, that wouldn't decree.
You're saying machrizin, you're going even further. Machrizin means decree as opposed to announcing, and that's the problem. Okay, that could be another approach to answering it. Answering the question. Though Rashi focuses more in terms of Yediyah. So I don't think that would work for Rashi.
No,
but
for us,
but you're saying for the Gemara.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think that's plausible. Another point, and again, we're not going to go into it, but if you read some of these sources that follow in your source book, you'll see that there are a number of sources that make the point that while it's true a person does have freedom, as we said before, they'll have natural predilections, and oftentimes to live a life of freedom, to live a life of free choice, is something which is extraordinarily difficult and requires a conscious act. The Tashbetz in the Tshuva cited here, as you'll see, puts it very powerfully. He writes that naturally a person through nature and nurture has certain predilections, and if you look, it's the paragraph beginning, V'haderach HaFilosofi, towards the end. And he writes that, he's actually explaining this Gemara, He writes, "V'afal pisha adam bechiri levatel zos hagzera im yisnaheg al pisichlo, aval im yisnaheg lefi tivo hagzera hi miskayames." Namely, that there is a type of gzera as to the way a person will live. It's almost like a quasi-deterministic view of the universe. A person is born, and based on their nature, or the way he puts it, based on the humors and their mazel, so a person will live a certain life. It's deterministic. It's simply that a person has the power to be misnaheg al pi sichlo, as opposed to being misnaheg al pi tivo. It brings new meaning to the notion of an unexamined life is not worth living. An unexamined life is not living. It's simply the natural outcome of how you were born. And a person, therefore, has to overcome their natural tendencies should they wish to live a life of freedom. Now, I think that this idea is quite interesting, especially when we consider the question of how to address a common question which is raised nowadays, which is that if you look in modern science, whether it's neurology or psychology, there's a very widespread assumption that a person's actions are basically determined. And it's phrased differently in different fields. Psychologists might say it one way, neurologists might say it a different way, but the question is how would the Torah respond? Earlier in the first shiur, we alluded to one possible response, which is that if you assume the basis of the question, which often it is that a person is nothing more than their cells. A person is nothing more than their physical body. Meaning to say that my decision making emerges entirely from my brain, and my brain is just a bunch of cells. So there's no freedom. And maybe you'll say on a very small level there's a type of, you know, quantum indeterminism, but for the most part, a person is just a machine, a person is just a computer, a person is just a bunch of cells. And accordingly, if that's the case, so then there is no room for freedom. Now, earlier the response that we gave based on the Torah was perhaps that's correct. If it were the case that a human being is nothing more than their cells that make them up, they're nothing more than a physical body, then indeed it would be the case that there is no true freedom. The basis of freedom comes from the soul, comes from the Tzelem Elokim, and that is the basis of freedom. In other words, obviously, from a scientific perspective, there's not going to be acknowledgement of the soul. The basic premise is that there's nothing beyond the physical makeup. And perhaps then their assumption is correct. If that were the case, then there would be little room for freedom. So that was the answer we presented earlier. Another possible response, based on this approach in the Tashbetz, which I think is articulated in many sources, this Meiri from Shabbos Kufnun Vav Amud Aleph presents a similar perspective, is that naturally speaking, a person will indeed follow a particular trajectory. There is such a thing as a teva, and that teva will in fact determine how a person lives their lives. It's only that a person can overcome that, but to a large degree we're acknowledging the power of nature and nurture in determining a person's outcome. Another point I want to bring up, and again there are a number of sources that if you look here pertain to that topic, is we could even look at it perhaps as a type of a case study, a situation where we see the Rishonim deal with the question of free will in a particular context, but the way in which they deal with this question sheds light on their general approach to free will and limits of free will. And that's the question of what do you do in cases where the Torah seems to indicate that God removes a particular party's free will? The classical example of this is the hardening of Paro's heart, where the Torah says that I'm going to harden God Paro's heart, and he's not going to be allowed to send the Jewish people free. Seemingly, we have a situation here where his free will is removed, where he doesn't have the ability to do that which is right, namely allow the Jewish people freedom. There are a number of approaches. I don't know if we'll see all of them today, but in these packets you'll see six approaches in the Rishonim as to how to deal with this question. And their approaches, as I said, are reflective of their general position and different perspectives on free will. What's interesting is that the Rambam, who until now we've seen has been the greatest defender of free will, who tells us that every single person can be like Moshe Rabbeinu or like Bilam, acknowledges in his discussion on this topic in Parak Vav of Hilchos Tshuva that there are times when a particular person's freedom is taken away. Sometimes, while it's generally the case that a person has freedom, sometimes a person will sin in such an egregious manner that their freedom is taken away. The Rambam sees free will almost as a form, as a gift. It's not something which is automatic. It's a gift. It's something which has to be deserved. And therefore, sometimes somebody will sin so egregiously that part of their punishment is their loss of freedom, or their loss of freedom is in order that they be able to be punished. It's interesting because the Rambam formulates this not as a loss of freedom, but that their ability to do tshuva is taken away. Now, if your ability to do tshuva is taken away, that is a lack of freedom, but that might also be reflective of the nature of tshuva insofar as it's a gift. It's not something which is automatic. Now, we could argue that perhaps in the case of Paro, the classical example, this is something that makes a lot of sense. We could even go so far as to say it's mida keneged mida. The Rambam in Shmona Prakim alludes to this possibility. Perhaps Paro lost his freedom. Why? Paro, as the Chazal are medayik, for the first five makos, it doesn't say that God hardened his heart. Paro hardened his own heart. What would Paro hardening his own heart mean? It means that he reflected to exercise freedom. He refused to acknowledge the clear, the obvious evidence. Anybody reasonable, anybody open, would have acknowledged after the first five makos that God exists, that the right thing to do is to allow the Jewish people freedom. If we adopt the approach of the Tashbates, had he decided to live thoughtfully, he certainly would have acknowledged that the appropriate thing to do was to allow the Jews freedom, and therefore, essentially, he hardened his own heart. Well, if that's the case, mida keneged mida, his heart was hardened, and that was his punishment. That would be a very nice explanation, except the Rambam actually goes further, because the Rambam writes, it's not just Paro, this isn't just a one-time yotzei min haklal where God hardens somebody's heart and takes away their freedom. Actually, this concept is quite pervasive in Tanakh. He writes, "V'efshar sheyachta adam chet gadol chataim rabim, ad sheyiten adin lefnei dain ha'emes sheyei piron mizeh chotei al chataim elu, she'oseh birtzono midato shemonim mimenu hatshuva." Here the Rambam is saying, of course, that it's obvious that a person will not be punished for a sin that they did not commit volitionally. Meaning to say, if Paro's heart was hardened, if his free will was taken away, let's say on the eighth plague when he didn't allow the Jewish people to go, he obviously won't be punished for that act because that act wasn't done freely. A person will never be punished for a sin which they didn't commit volitionally. Nevertheless, he was being punished for the sins that he committed earlier freely. He chose to enslave the Jewish people, to persecute them, to kill them. That was certainly a free choice. He's being punished now for those actions that he did earlier. Okay, so the Rambam says that's a great example, but then he gives other examples. Hu she'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar al Yedei Yeshayahu Hashmein Lev Ha'am Hazeh. The beginning of Yeshayahu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells, God tells the nation that, at least in Rambam's interpretation, they've lost their freedom. They've lost their ability to do tshuva. Now again, there is a distinction perhaps between a general loss of freedom and a loss of doing tshuva, but still a loss of tshuva is a loss of freedom. If you look at the Mefarshim over there in Yeshayahu, that's from Perek Vav, you'll see that there the different Mefarshim on the page deal with this issue. Does this pasuk imply a loss of freedom? V'chein hu omer, v'ayu malivim b'malachei ha'lokhim uvozim dvarav, umisatim b'nivyav ad alos chamas Hashem be'amo ad le'en marpei. That's from Divrei Hayamim, referring to the people during the time of Tzidkiyahu, and he's saying, what does it mean, ad le'en marpei? Kilomar, chatu b'rtzonam v'hirbu lifshawa ad shenischaivu limnoa mehena tshuva shehi amarpei. They sinned so egregiously that it became necessary that the ability to do tshuva be taken away from them, which is the marpei. Lefikach, then he quotes the psukim of Paro, and he quotes other examples. Sichon, it says, Lefi avono shehayu lo nischayv limono min hatshuva shenamar ki iksha Hashem elokecha es rucho v'imeitz es levavo. The same thing about the Kenanim. Lefi toavo sehem mona mehen hatshuva ad she'asu milchama im Yisrael shenamar ki me'es Hashem haisa l'chazek es libam l'kras ha'milchama im Yisrael l'man hachrimeim. And this isn't just true about non-Jews, it's not just true about individuals like Paro and Sichon, but about entire generations of Jews. V'chein Yisrael b'yemei Eliyahu, l'fi shehirbu l'fshoa, mona me'oso hamarbim l'fshoa tshuva, sheneemar v'ata hasibosa es libam achoranis, kilomar manata mehen hatshuva. We saw earlier that this pasuk was quoted by the Gemara in Kiddushin, with respect to this question of the extent to free will. We saw Reb Tzadok dealt with this pasuk in terms of his discussion of free will, and now we see the Rambam's approach. Reb Tzadok says that on a certain level there is no freedom about sin generally, and he quoted this pasuk. The Rambam says this is talking about an extreme situation where an entire generation lost their ability, or at least a large portion of the generation lost their ability to do tshuva. So that's the first approach to instances where Tanakh seems to remove freedom. The second approach, another approach which we're going to discuss, this approach will help in cases like Paro. It won't necessarily help with respect to other psukim. However, as we noted earlier, many of the other psukim, like Hashmein Ham Hazeh, Lev Ham Hazeh, are not conclusive, is based on a famous pasuk in Mishle. Palge Mayim Lev Melech Biad Hashem Al Kol Asher Yachpots Yatenu. From Mishle, Chaf Aleph Aleph. Like streams of water is the heart of a king in the hands of God. Wherever he wishes, he directs it. God directs kings. The implication here is that when it comes to the decisions of kings, God does not give them free will. He directs them. You perhaps might say that's not talking about moral decisions, and as such it's not so problematic with respect to free will. Perhaps that's with respect to political decisions. However, generally speaking, by many Mefarshim, this pasuk is interpreted as stating that kings do not have freedom in their choices. I was told by reliable sources, a remarkable idea. Rav Moshe Feinstein apparently would vote, and he would always vote in all elections except for the president, because of this pasuk, Palge Mayim Lev Melech. He felt that there's no point in voting who's going to be president, because it's God who directs the actions of the president anyway. So you could apparently he didn't think that applied for the mayor or for the Senate, so he would vote for mayors and congressmen and senators, but he wouldn't vote for the president. There are different reasons given in the Mefarshim why this is true. Why is it that God takes away the freedom of kings? Some Mefarshim give a more practical solution. Rabbeinu Yonah, for example, in his commentary in that pasuk says, "Mipnei sheharabim tluyim b'melech." that the decisions of the king affect so many people. Ralbag develops that idea. He says that ki'ilu haya poel hamelech be'elu advarim masur lebchiraso bishleimus kederech hamasur lebchiraso pe'ulosav be'atzmo haya zeh ha'inyan sakana nifla el ha'am asher tachas hamelech ahu. The decisions of a king have such large implications that they affect thousands of people, tens of thousands of people. If a king decides to go to war, if he doesn't decide to go to war, if he decides to pursue one policy or over another policy, it would be reckless, as it were, of God to grant kings free will. And therefore, the decisions of kings are limited. Others, however, understand this pasuk more in the teleological sense. Meaning to say, this idea appears in the writings of Ramchal in many places, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a certain plan for history. History doesn't just happen on its own, and while there's free will, nevertheless, there's also direction. And the direction has a clear direction in the macro level, in the broad level. It's leading to a type of tikkun, but that tikkun requires ra, and the like. And therefore, the decisions of kings especially are limited because their decisions are so, as we said before, they loom large in terms of the direction of history. Therefore, it's necessary that kings especially be guided in a particular direction so that history is guided in a particular direction. This relates to Ramchal's general theory about the difference between Hashkacha Pratis and Hashkacha Klalis. Hashkacha Pratis, as understood by Ramchal, means that individuals have Hashkacha that God, but there's also free will, but then there's Hashkacha Klalis, where God directs history in a particular direction. This approach works very well in the psukim about Paro. What did the psukim say? Ki ani echbadeti es libo ves lev avadav leman shisi ososai eila bikir bo. As we said before, the purpose of the Makos was in order to reveal certain things in the world. Leman teidun ki ani Hashem, leman teidun ki ein kamoni bekarav haaretz, leman teidun ki ani Hashem bekarav haaretz, leman teidun ki afli Hashem bein Mitzrayim uvein Yisrael, right? Leman shisi ososai eila bikir bo. God says, I want certain things to happen during this Exodus. I want there to be miracles. I want to distinguish the Jewish people. And therefore, I'm going to harden Paro's heart in order to make sure that these certain goals take place. So that's another limitation to freedom. Another approach to understanding the hardening of Paro's heart. Oh, I'll just give you one other fascinating application of this. Rabbi Schechter in Pnimei HaRav, also in your source sheets on page Kuf Dalet, quotes the Rav as using this notion to answer a troubling question about Das Torah and the like. Perhaps later in the year we'll talk about Das Torah. But the Rav was asked, how is it that so many of the Gedolim in the years leading up to World War II advised staying in Europe? Many people sought advice from Gedolim. They said, you know, should we go to America? Should we leave Europe? And many Gedolim said, no, America's a trefa medina, and you should stay here. And the question is that it would seem that that advice led to the death of many people. How could Chachamim give such seemingly bad advice? And the Rav answered by saying, Meshiv Chachamim Achor Vedata Misakel. He, of course, was alluding to the famous Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin in Perek HaNizakin discusses a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva about whether the right thing to do was to give up Yerushalayim when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had the chance to be granted one request by Vespasian. He said, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha, and two other requests, but he didn't say, save Yerushalayim. The Gemara says his cheshbon was, well, maybe a big request like that wouldn't have been granted. Tafasta meruba lo tafasta, let me get something I know I can get. Others point out that he was sort of looking more long-term in terms of history. Saving Yerushalayim would have been a couple of years. He was learning, he was looking towards the future of Klal Yisrael and Torah Shebal Peh and the like. Nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva said about this, Meshiv Chachamim Acha Radatim Yisakel. He made a mistake. But Rabbi Akiva doesn't just say he made an intellectual mistake. Rabbi Akiva says, God turned his mind astray. Meshiv Chachamim Achor. The Rav said that's the same thing, the same answer with respect to the advice of the Gedolim in Europe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for whatever reasons, and certainly we don't know them, wanted the Holocaust to happen, wanted so many people to die, and he directed the decision-making and the advice of Gedolim accordingly. If you take the teleological approach of Ramchal, like we said before, so this idea seems to fall very much in line with that same idea, with that same idea of Palgei Mayim Biad Malachim as understood by Ramchal. The next approach, yes?
If you say that means that rulers really have no free will, so there's really no point in ever critiquing the heads of state of any...
That's a good point. It's a good point, except that I would say two things. First of all, I don't know if anybody would say that they have no free will. It could be that some of their decisions are not made freely, but it doesn't mean that they have zero free will. So yeah, not knowing...
A whole debate of whether it was the best or not to train.
Again, I don't know whether that was a... I'll never know whether that was an act that was done freely or not. So therefore, critiquing might make sense. The second point, though, is that just like, for example, when it comes to Hashgacha, and we'll have a chance to discuss Hashgacha more broadly another time, I hope, but going forward, a person has to make all decisions to their best of their ability, though in hindsight, they'll say that was Hashgacha. For example, the famous Gemara in Bava Kamma about the Nichum Aveilim. So the Gemara says that going forward, a person has to go ahead and, let's say, they're making certain medical decisions. They're trying, somebody is sick, Rachmana Litzlan, and they have to decide whether to do chemo or surgery. So going forward, of course, they're going to make the decision to the best of their ability. They'll do research, they'll seek out the best doctors and the best medical advice. However, let's say they make a particular choice. Imagine they choose surgery, and the patient dies on the operating table. So the Gemara says that it's almost blasphemous to after the fact say, oh, if only I would have chosen chemo. No, at that point a person has to submit. A person has to say, this was God's will that my relative was supposed to die. And they shouldn't. And it's almost blasphemous, the Gemara says, for them to say, oh, if only I would have chosen the other path, then they would still be alive. No, the person died. Clearly, that was the divine decree. Now, if you take that approach while the person is still alive, you could say, well, it doesn't matter what I do. After all, if he's supposed to live, he'll live. He's supposed to die, he's going to die. The answer is that we distinguish between going forward and looking backwards. This could be understood in more than one way, depending on how you understand Teva and Hashgacha and Hishtadlos and the like, and we'll develop this a little further. But for similar reasons, we might say to this king that certainly when the decision hasn't been made, we're going to try our best to influence his decision, even if after the fact we'll say, well, it might have been decreed in heaven. Yes, Nathan? Exactly, that was the first answer, that we don't know which ones, exactly, absolutely. Okay, another approach to the hardening of Paru's heart can be found in the second answer of the Ramban. The Ramban writes, Ki ayu chatzi amakos alav b'pish'o, ki lo ne'amar bahen rak v'yechazek lev paro, v'yechabedes libo. Hine lo ratza l'shalcham l'chvod Hashem. Aval kasher gavru hamakos alav, v'nilel isbolosam, rach libo, v'haya nimlach l'shalcham mikovid hamakos. Lo lasos ritzon baro. So, this is a famous answer. The Ramban says, basically, that what did Paro want to do? What Paro wanted to do was not to let the Jews go. And this becomes clear from the fact that after the first five Makos, he didn't release the Jewish people. What happened? What happened was the power of the Makos put so much pressure on him that he felt no choice but to release the Jews. Not because that's something that he wanted to do, but because it was something that he felt compelled to do. If I go ahead and I squeeze your arm and squeeze and squeeze and squeeze and say uncle. So you might not want to say uncle, and you're going to try as hard as you can not to say it. But at a certain point in time, you're going to be overcome by the pain and you'll say uncle. Now, did you say uncle freely? Well, that's going to depend on how you define freedom. On the one hand, yes, technically speaking, you still had a degree of freedom. On the other hand, you felt compelled. You felt forced to do something that you didn't want to do. The Ramban adapts that latter definition. And he says freedom, therefore, was going to be removed from Paro due to the pressure of Makos. He redefines freedom. If you look carefully at his words, he says he was going to do it mikovet ha-makos and not lasos ritzon baro. Freedom for the Ramban basically means ethical freedom. I have the choice to do what's right and the choice to do what's wrong. At a certain point in time, Paro was going to be overcome. He was going to lose the option of doing what he really wanted to do, and that was to keep the Jewish people, to do that which was wrong. Since he was going to lose that power, God hardened his heart. The term vayichazek es libo work very beautifully. It's not that he took away his freedom, but he gave strength to his heart. It's almost like giving him anesthesia to not feel the pain and therefore make the decisions that he really wanted to make. So Ramban therefore says, no, freedom will never be taken away. That is, true freedom will never be taken away. He rejects the notion that a person can sin in such an egregious fashion and lose his freedom. No, even Paro had freedom. And he comes up with this brilliant insight to explain how, if freedom is properly defined, Paro indeed had freedom. This idea can be found in many Mefarshim in many places. The Radak, for example, uses this same idea to explain the B'nai Eli. The B'nai Eli, again, according to the simple reading of the text, lost their freedom to do that which is right after they were chastised. And the Radak explains that had the B'nai Eli wished to do sincere tshuva, so not only would they have been able to do sincere tshuva, but v'yelo siyua eloki b'tshuva. They would have had divine help in achieving this tshuva. However, they didn't really want to do tshuva. What did they want to do? He says they wanted to make a press conference, say, we sincerely regret that which they did. They would come up, you know, with their families, with their wives. They would have shed some tears. They would have felt bad for their immoral behavior. And everything would have been okay. They would have been forgiven. They could have kept their jobs. What would have happened? Well, that was totally insincere tshuva. They would have been punished. People would have wondered, why are these people, these Bali tshuva, being punished? And they would have questioned God. So God took away their ability to do insincere tshuva. But had they wished to do sincere tshuva, that would never have been taken away. What's the Radak doing? He's making a similar point, if we think about it, that the Ramban makes. Radak is saying, their ability to do that which is right is always preserved. In this case, what was right? What was right was to do sincere tshuva. And that ability remained. What did they want to do? They wanted to do wrong. Like Paro, they chose evil. How their evils carried out, so God didn't give them the option of choosing evil, of doing this insincere press conference. Instead, he forced them to stay in their way. But if we define freedom as the ability to always do what's right or what's wrong, so then Radak argues, or at least implicit in his interpretation, is the argument that the freedom to choose right from wrong is always preserved. And this is also very important, because when we think about the question of freedom and what actions do we have freedom and what don't we have freedom about, whether you look at it like Rav Huttner did at the beginning or Rav Dessler the like, this notion that freedom is primarily important, at least from a theological perspective, only in terms of right from wrong, as the Pasuk says, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz meyira shamayim, that's where the freedom lies. So I think that helps us understand a lot of the questions that are raised against the possibility of free will. The Chevre is learning Yevamos now. If you look, Rabbi Elchanan has an interesting insight into this notion in Ramban in explaining the concept of ones, and how to understand, in one of the famous Lamda Shechakiras about what ones is, he uses this notion from Ramban to make a particular point about that. Ayin Sham. Another approach, in Rishonim this is given by the Akedas Yitzchak, Rav Sadia Gaon, Amunos Videos, and the like, is to preserve free will to such an extent that to say that Paro's decision-making process was not altered one bit. If we consider the spectrum of approaches we've considered until now, so we saw at the beginning the Rambam says perhaps, yes, Paro's freedom was lost because he sinned so egregiously. The Ramban says, though God altered his decision-making process, he maintained free will. Akedas Yitzchak, Rav Sadia Gaon and the like say no, God did not even tamper in his decision-making process. Well, how do you read the Pesukim? What do the Pesukim mean? It's a rather forced reading, and from the forced reading you see the extent to which they wish to preserve absolute freedom. The answer, the Akedas Yitzchak says, that this means that God administered the Makos in such a way so as to allow Paro to keep the Jewish people in Egypt. Meaning to say that had the Makos been given one right after the other, Dan, Sfadei, Akinim, Arov, then Paro surely would not have had the wherewithal to keep the Jewish people in Egypt. So therefore, to give Paro that choice, he separated the Makos a month apart. That's why so many times Paro says, yes, yes, they could go in the middle of the Makkah, and then the Makkah goes away, and he changes his mind, he calls Moshe back, no, they have to stay. That's what it means that God hardened his heart. Lo shemana mimenu darkei etshuva biyadayim, chas v'shalom. Right? This is Akedas Yitzchak talking about the Rambam's position. He says, chas v'shalom. Ella, shenasan lo makom litos ulis kashos al yedei shiyavi es hamakos beseder zu achar zu velo kulan biyachad v'cheinasan revach ben kolachas v'achas and v'hu al derech she'amu habali tamei poschen lo, etc., etc. Yes?
In all these issues, would you say the majority of sources do not draw a distinction between Jew and Gentile, or would you say there's a bit of a split there between the rest of the stick
I can't say for sure because I don't know enough, but I haven't seen so much of a distinction between Jew and Gentile, both in the Kabbalistic sources and in the rationalist sources. That in certain places maybe some allusions to it, but overall no. That's not a distinction that I've seen stressed. Because even according to the Ramban, while they where there was a preservation of free will as defined by the Ramban, HaKadosh Baruch Hu still tampered with the decision-making process of Paro by hardening his heart. In other words, God intervened in such a way that, as Akedas Yitzchak sees it, is a violation of free will.
But it's not really...
So that's the Ramban's answer, and it's a very good answer. But if you want to argue for an even broader type of freedom, which includes absolute freedom of decision making, then you're going to reject that approach as well. I know there's some questions, but we have but 3 minutes, and I want to at least present one last approach. This is from the Maharal and the Nesiv HaTshuva, absolutely powerful approach. The Maharal writes, this is in the back of your packet, deals with a very fundamental question. He says, what makes up a person? Who are we? This is a question I think we all wonder. You know, we have different voices in front of us, in our heads, when we're trying to decide what to do, what not to do. Who is the real us? Maharal says tshuva is the following. Tshuva saying that I sinned because I was overcome by passion. I really want to do the right thing, right? Many of us probably, looking back at some of our kabbalos that we might have made just a couple weeks ago on Yom Kippur, probably noticing that we're not always doing everything we hope to, right? Why is it that human beings so frequently want to do that which is right and then do very differently than that which they want? Because essentially, Maharal answers, people want to do that which is right. They're overcome by passion. Tshuva means saying that the real me is the intellect. The real me is the one who wants to do the right thing. The sin that I did is because I was overcome by passion. I shouldn't be held responsible because that doesn't reflect my true essence. Therefore, if someone is to sin using the intellect, to choose evil not because they were overcome by desire, but because they intellectually choose evil, so then tshuva by definition is impossible. When Paro went ahead after the first, second, third, fourth, fifth Makkah, refused to allow the Jewish people to go, so he demonstrated that this was not just a sin of passion and desire, says the Maharal, but it was an intellectual choice for evil. If that happens, tshuva by definition is impossible, not as a punishment, but because tshuva's only when you say the real me isn't that, and here that's not possible. This idea certainly needs further development, but we're done this topic, and God willing, next week we'll move on. Everybody try to move quickly to Weisberg for the next year, and also the sign-in ship is over here. I'm happy to take further questions along the way. Thank you very much.